I am indeed Art Bell, and listen, I have no way of confirming who the final caller in that last hour was who claimed that he had orders to fire a harp, the harp array, at a certain target. I have no way of knowing. He called us. He claimed to be a former guest, and I won't give out the last name, but... And not only do I not know that it was really the person who he claimed to be, I also don't know that what he had to say is true. So I'll just leave it at that. Coming up in a moment, Los Angeles native Rick Strassman. I want to warn you a little bit about this program. We're going to talk about drugs, one drug in particular, and it's called the Spirit Molecule. Actually, the book that Rick wrote is called the Spirit Molecule, and so we're obviously going to be talking about drugs, and I know that will offend some people, so if that will offend you, please turn off your radio now. The author of this book, L.A. native Rick Strassman, holds degrees from Stanford University and Albert Einstein College of Medicine at Yeshiva University. He took his internship and general psychiatry residency at the University of California Davis Medical Center in Sacramento. He spent 10 years as a tenured professor at the University of Mexico. Dr. Strassman also began the first U.S. government-approved and funded clinical research with psychedelic drugs in over 20 years. Years, something nobody would touch. In addition, he has been a consultant to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, National Institute on Drug Abuse, Veterans Administration Hospitals, Social Security Administration, and other state and local agencies. Dr. Strassman's current practice is psychiatry in Taos, New Mexico, and is Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry in the UNM School of Medicine. So in a moment, we're going to have a discussion about something that he calls the spirit molecule, otherwise known as DMT, when we return. Coast to Coast AM. This program, over the years, has been dedicated to a large degree to the study of things that we do not understand, life after death, experiences with entities that we don't understand, the paranormal, in other words. And one legitimate area of investigation into the paranormal, without question, is the use of drugs. Now, I understand that with the war on drugs and all the rest of it, it's perhaps not a politically correct topic to be delving into, but I don't care. I think it's an important topic to be going into. I think we've got the right person to do it. Rick Strassman, welcome to the program.
So thank you for having me on tonight, Art.
You're very welcome. Where are you actually, Rick?
So I'm in Taos, New Mexico tonight.
Taos, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. That's in northern New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in this sort of research anyway?
So it started off in my college days through my studies and through my reading. I became interested in the biological basis of mystical experience. And I also, was kind of hearing stories from friends and from other researchers who were describing states of consciousness that sounded quite similar to mystical states,
mm-hmm.
which those individuals had undergone through the ingestion of a psychedelic drug. And so I started to think that perhaps one of the things that occurs in cases of naturally occurring mystical states is the release of some kind of psychedelic drug in the brain. And
wait a second, Rick. You seem to suggest that possibly all experiences of this kind are related to some sort of release, whether it be natural or otherwise, in the brain. Is that correct? Is that right?
Well, I think on that there's a correlate. There has to be some kind of biological correlate of consciousness, of conscious experience. I think in terms of the first place to look for some biological correlate of an altered state of consciousness is through a chemical, a drug, a hormone, or what have you, that has its own psychedelic properties.
Oh, that's really interesting. But again, are you suggesting that whether it be a natural release of the brain or something taken externally like DMT, that possibly almost all of the reported encounters, I guess we'll call them, are from some sort of drug in the brain, some sort of release of something in the brain?
Yeah. Oh,
do you have a cold or having a problem?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a cold in it. Sorry. Yeah, my throat's a little hoarse. But
okay, grab a good glass of water there or
yes,
something.
I've got some water, thank you. Yes, so I think in terms of cause and effect, you know, it's always kind of difficult to posit a cause and effect relationship if it's a correlative one as well. In other words, if it's kind of hard to kind of, you know, describe it as either the chicken or the egg in this case. I think probably if you looked at the brains very carefully of people that were undergoing a mystical experience, it's probably quite likely that there is some kind of biological thing going on. And
have you actually done that? Have you looked at the brains of people undergoing those kinds of experiences?
Well, no, I have not. Other people have studied the brains of people experiencing mystical states in terms of brain scans, CAT scans, PET scans, those kinds of things. But so far, nobody has actually, looked at concentrations of DMT in those people.
All right. Let's examine what DMT is. What does DMT stand for?
So DMT stands for dimethyltryptamine. It's a chemical cousin of serotonin. And as most people know, serotonin is a common neurotransmitter in the brain. And serotonin... is in blood cells, it's in the brain, it's in the gut. It's also closely related to melatonin, which is...
Melatonin is a sleep, something you take when you want to sleep, isn't it?
Correct. It's also a product of the pineal gland. And through my readings and through some of my speculations in college, when I was starting, to formulate on some of these ideas more carefully, I started, to look at the pineal gland as a possible source of a psychedelic chemical that could be, mediating mystical experiences.
And the pineal gland is located where?
It's located in the center of the brain. It's an unpaired organ in the brain. It's pretty much the only unpaired organ in the brain. So there's only one pineal gland, as opposed to two hippocampuses or, two amygdalas, things like that. And it's been an organ of great speculation throughout the centuries in terms of its function.
All right. What is the conventional wisdom regarding the function of the pineal gland?
Well, in terms of lower animals, it's a third eye. It's got a retina and a cornea and a lens, all those kinds of things. It's capable of receiving light information and it will cause the biology of the animal to change in accordance with the amount of light it's exposed to.
Really?
In terms of color of the skin and temperature and...
No, wait a minute. In an animal, Rick, the pineal gland is located in the same place as a human. That would be the center of the brain, right?
So it's closer to the surface of the skull in lower animals like amphibians and reptiles and newts and salamanders, those kinds of animals.
What about dogs, cats, monkeys?
So that's more comparable to the location in the human. It's kind of in the center.
Okay,
of the brain.
So at the center of the brain, Rick, if that's where the pineal gland is in those animals, you're still suggesting that it's very much like an eye? In other words, you can actually see and detect light in the center of the brain?
In terms of mammals, it's still responsive to light, but it's indirectly responsive to light through information that's received through the eyes, as opposed to directly experiencing, light at the top of the skull.
Okay. When was DMT actually discovered?
Oh, it was discovered in the 1930s, and a few years after that, it was discovered. So it was first discovered in specific types of psychedelic plants. Coming from the Amazon in particular. This was in the 1940s and the 1950s. And around 10 years after that, it was discovered in the blood of animals. And then a few years after that, it was discovered in human blood.
Mm-hmm. I take it then somebody in the jungle somewhere ate something with DMT content in it and found out they were suddenly having some sort of unusual experience, something like that?
Correct, yes. So there's a combination of plants which are consumed
Boy, it sounds like you're having a rough time of it tonight, Rick.
Well, let me get a drink of water here.
Yeah, by all means.
Yeah, so there's a combination of plants from the Amazon called ayahuasca, and this has been used for quite a long time in the context of Indian rituals and the like, in terms of inducing, psychedelic and, mystical kinds of states in Brazil and Peru, those parts of the continent. And so DMT was discovered discovered in one of the plants that is in ayahuasca. It's also an ingredient in some of the plants that are in psychedelic snuffs as well that are used in the Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Do modern American natives use it at all? Has it made its way to the North American continent?
So it is gradually, making inroads through a couple of ayahuasca-using churches. And actually, one of them was just given permission by the Supreme Court to use it.
Really?
In the United States.
I take it as a religious part of their freedom, right?
Yeah, well, it's their sacrament, and so that was the argument that they made. Peyote is the sacrament of the Native American church that contains mescaline.
Sure. Yes. Okay, well, let's try this straight-on question. If somebody takes DMT, what are the likely effects? What do we know about it? What will it do?
So it depends on, the route of administration. If it's smoked, and in the case of its use on the street, it's smoked as a freebase generally. It starts quite quickly, and there's quite a strong rush, and it starts off. There's quite a display of geometric, kaleidoscopic, visual imagery.
In other words, it's kind of like, What other drug would you compare it to? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well,
what
sure.
other drug?
Oh, I mean, kind of like LSD, kind of like
LSD, all right.
psilocybin, you know, kind of
Oh.
like mescaline. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a number of compounds that are called the classical psychedelics. So DMT is categorized as a classical psychedelic, along with along with LSD and mescaline and psilocybin.
Have you used the drug yourself?
No, so no, I haven't actually. You know, but I've talked, and you know, given the compound, you know, so much, that's kind of it. That is kind of as if I have taken it myself. I've been around it so much.
It's like you've taken it yourself. You actually haven't. I mean, you don't have to be afraid to admit it if you have.
Oh, no, I haven't actually. No, but
Haven't.
yeah,
Other
but
psychedelic drugs?
well, a long time ago, I suppose, you know, when they were still legal, I kind of dabbled, you know.
Kind of dabbled. Okay.
I must have been in my teenage years.
You seem inclined not to believe that these experiences, for example, contact with an alien or contact with a spirit of some sort, could as easily be a natural experience as it could be either the release of DMT by the pineal gland or any other drug, as it could be a natural experience, a real experience. You seem almost prepared to sort of put it all off to that, one way or the other.
On the contrary, I think actually, I think in terms of what occurs with DMT, either if it's externally ingested or if concentrations increase in the brain on their own, I think what may occur with DMT is it opens, specific doorways, which are otherwise closed. And through those doorways, it is possible to make, contact with perhaps, external freestanding, kind of real experiences.
Are you interested in other psychedelics as well as DMT, or are you focused entirely on DMT?
So those DMT studies that I was doing took place between 1990 and 1995, and I was interested in studying specifically, DMT for a couple of reasons. One of them is it's quite obscure, and I think in terms of, starting those sorts of studies, at that time, it was important, not to draw a lot of attention to our studies. And if we had started off with studying LSD, I think our studies could have garnered quite a bit, more publicity. So it was an obscure compound that was kind of an inter that was an interesting part of it. And it's also extremely brief. And our studies took place in the hospital, and I was concerned of in terms of our individuals in this study, experiencing adverse kinds of effects. And if it was, a compound whose effects were kind of brief, then we could handle them a lot more easily than a 12-hour drug like LSD. And also, I was interested in DMT, because of my interest in spontaneous, states of mystical experience, which were strengthened, through the quality of DMT, being a naturally occurring drug.
You said LSD was a 12-hour drug. How many hours of a drug is DMT?
Oh, it starts off extremely quickly. We were giving it intravenously, so it begins within a heartbeat or two, and so the peak occurs within 2 minutes, and then people start coming down within 3 minutes or so, and they're pretty normal at the
Wait a
space.
minute. The peak occurs in 2 minutes and they start coming down in 3 minutes?
Pretty much, yeah, and they're
Very
complete.
fast.
It's like being blasted out of a nuclear cannon. That's the way people describe it.
Wow.
Yeah, well, and it and everybody in the study was, kind of normal at the half hour point.
Okay. All right. Rick, I'm going to chat with you for a moment during the break, so stay right where you are. My guest is Rick Strassman, who's having a little bit of a difficult time this night, obviously has a cold or something or another. From Manila in the Philippines, Southeast Asia, I'm Art Bell. Indeed. Here I am. How y'all doing? Rick Strassman is going to be leaving us now. He's obviously under the weather, and we'll reschedule his visit for when time for when he's feeling a little bit better. And it's really too bad. I watch my fast blast very carefully, and people say all kinds of unkind things, like he's a victim of DMT himself, and he just finished saying why he hasn't taken that. So it's obviously something else. He's a pretty serious cold and not feeling very well. So we'll reschedule Rick. However, I do want to say this. I think that drugs, DMT perhaps, and some other psychedelic drugs are a legitimate area of exploration into experiences that otherwise we don't have explanation for. However, unlike Rick, I don't think that they represent the entirety of those experiences. I think too many people have obviously reported them without the assistance of DMT or LSD or any other psychedelic for that matter. So I think it's a worthwhile topic, and we will have Rick back at a future date. In the meantime, what we're going to do is go to open line. So anybody with any, tell you what we'll do. Tomorrow night, I was going to open the lines for anybody who has had an experience in another universe. Now, that sounds pretty wild, I know, but let me lay it out a little bit here, all right? What I want is anybody out there who has slipped, I guess that's a way to put it, slipped. Would that be the right way to phrase it? There are certain slips that do go on. People suddenly find themselves in a place they don't recognize, perhaps surrounded by people in a period of dress that is not contemporary at all. In other words, they've gone back in time, or they've gone to another universe. Modern theoretical physicists think we may have 11, even more, universes in that ultimately to be discovered. And who knows what their makeup is, but people have slipped into these. We know that for sure. Now, what I've asked is that only those who have had a conscious experience call. And by that, I mean, don't start out by saying, well, I had a dream, because then there's no way to know, and it would obviously cast a little more doubt on it. If what happened to you, on the other hand, happened during a non-sleep, completely conscious moment, then I definitely want to hear about it. That and completely open lines coming up in a moment. Completely open lines. So anything at all goes. Anything you'd like to bring up or talk about is fair game. Wild card line, you are on the air. Hello. Hello. Going one. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I did not properly push the button. Wild card line, you're still not on the air. Now let me try this one. Wild card line, you are definitely on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hello, Blair.
Hey, I was reading this old book by Gina Sermonara of the Edgar Cayce story on reincarnation. She published it back in 1950. Mm-hmm. And she talks about this concept called suspended karma and having to do, let's say, with the Atlanteans reincarnating as Americans now because there's a similarity in the civilizations. And that's what has you work your karma out through. For, according to Edgar Cayce, we had the electricity, radio, and television, air travel, and all this kind of solar and atomic power were in the Atlantean times, and now we have the same thing now. So the folks that, let's see, how can you put that, they were solely deficient and made their big mistakes during Atlantis had to wait or have a suspended karma until we had a similar type of technology or something where they could work out their karma, and so they come back as Americans. So I'm sort of thinking it's sort of interesting what's happening in the country today and worldwide, that maybe we're getting a second chance. What do you think?
Well, if we are, we're blowing it, Blair. I don't think we've learned a whole lot. If this is a karmic experience we're having, I don't think we've learned a lot, because we're in the middle of destroying the world we live in right now. I wonder how many people actually still deny that. That is to say that we are acting in a destructive manner toward our own planet. So I'm not sure if the karmic part is true, that we really learned anything. And I've always wondered about that one aspect of reincarnation. It's always bothered me. If there really is reincarnation, if we come back, and we come back without any conscious memories of that which we once were, then what good does it do us? What good is reincarnation? And how can you build upon a life and move toward perfection if you have no conscious memories whatsoever of the mistakes you previously made? I've always wondered about that. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Yes, is this Art Bell?
It is indeed.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. This is William from Rock Hill, South Carolina. I wanted to talk about, first of all, I wanted to congratulate you on your new marriage.
Well, thank you.
And I'm sitting here with my beautiful Philippine wife, who is from Binyan Laguna.
Very good. That's not that far away.
About an hour and a half southeast of Manila.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear her.
She's talking to her sister in Binyan right now.
I see.
But what I wanted to talk to you about, a couple of weeks ago, you had someone on that was talking about the CETA program. And I finished in engineering years and years ago. Lately, in the last couple of years, I've been trying to do a lot of research on anti-gravity and free energy and gotten more or less involved in the same types of things that you're involved in.
Well, all right. If you've done that much research, Rick, have you actually found anybody with a sustainable claim to free energy? Have you actually found anybody able to demonstrate either free energy or even return?
Well, they keep saying I've found some new ideas that seem very promising. Like the parallel path electric motor and things of that nature. But let me get on with my other thing first, and then you can ask me questions about the other. They were talking about the CETA program trying to contact aliens using radio waves, which travel at the speed of light.
All right, let me ask you, are you talking about SETI?
Yeah, you're right, SETI.
I'm
mispronouncing it. I'm sorry.
All right. That's all right.
Here's my thinking about it. If someone is so advanced that they've already figured out anti-gravity to be able to visit the Earth, then they're not using radio waves or anything remotely resembling radio waves to communicate with. Because if I tried to call you and using radio waves, it would take 20 billion years for a radio wave to go across the universe and 20 billion years for it to come back. Well, if they've figured out anti-gravity, then they're communicating with gravity waves, and somebody has...
All right, well, let me just stop you and correct you a little bit. It would be about, by current estimates, 15 billion years to get to the edge of the universe at the speed of light. So you're talking about light years, and they just recently corrected themselves. Who's they? The scientists involved. Indicating that the universe is about 15, it was earlier thought to have been about 13 billion years old. Last week, or was it the previous week, they said, oops, no, it's actually about 15 billion years old. But he's absolutely correct. It would take radio traveling at the speed of light entirely 15 billion years to get to what we now regard as the edge of the universe. I wonder if they can miss it by 2 billion years, how really far out or closer than they believe it to be, it really is. I just wonder about that. To have that kind of error margin would indicate to me that it could be a whole lot closer or a whole lot farther away than they know. And I guess I'll leave it at that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art, this is Mark at Fallon, Nevada.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I lived in Tucson about 11 years ago. I wanted to ask you if you think this might have been an abduction. I was driving down Sendero Road, my old 62 Dodge Dart, in the road at a dip, translucent, I'd say orange, probably 30 feet at the top, 30 feet high, 20 feet at the top. It was an inverted triangle, translucent. Went through the dip. My car died. I lost 17 minutes. I was going to my girlfriend's house at the time. And got to her house, called the Air Force. Nothing was in the air, nothing at all, whatsoever. She noticed a little bloody spot in the back of my neck. It's like a little V. And it's now a cute little white scar behind my right ear. Now, I've tried calling other people and talking to this and that and the other thing, and nobody's ever been able to give me an explanation or anything, or if there's ever been an entity even that looked like that that anybody had ever experienced.
How do you know that you had 17 missing minutes?
Well, my friend, I had my watch on, and I look, when I looked at the thing, I looked down at my watch, and it was like, okay, I'm late. And the car died, and it, the last thing I remember was kind of rolling up out of an Arroyo, and the next thing I looked back down, it was a wind-up watch. It wasn't electronic. It was a Bulova, and there it was. And
all right, was, do you have any conscious memories of what went on during those 17 minutes?
Not a thing, my friend. Not a thing.
All right. I would say that there's a very, very good chance that that you were abducted. And the only way you're going to really find out whether or not that's true is to volunteer to go through some sort of hypnotic experiment with somebody. If somebody puts you under, then there's a very good chance you can find out what happened during that 17 minutes if you have the cojones for it. Now, I wonder psychologically, I mean, we are... In the world right now, we are experiencing abductions. We are being taken. Now, most people want to believe that if they are here, and I do believe they are here, and they are watching us, and they are abducting us, that they're nothing but little friendly guys. I'm not one of those people. I give equal possibility, absolute equal possibility, to the chance that they are not our friends. I mean, friends, after all, don't pluck you out of an automobile and experiment with you and do things that result in bloody little marks that become scars and then not tell you what happened. So I don't know. This whole abduction thing is worth pursuing. It's interesting, but it's not necessarily, in my opinion, benign. Not at all. Going to the first-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Yes, this is Steve calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm glad I got through. I'm kind of a new listener, but my friends have been listening for a long time. And I'm going to just tell you about an experience I had driving to Myrtle Creek, Oregon. I pulled over in Redding just to sit down for a while, take a rest on a bench. And all of a sudden, I can use your word, I slipped into another dimension. And I was surrounded in every direction. I turned and looked, as I'm trying to do now. And people were, instead of like being in a cafe, they were standing by trees. And they were in pairs or three, and they were all just having conversations. It was some kind of like a conversation room, but it wasn't.
Oh, okay, stop for a second. Let me get all of this straight. You said you were driving.
Yes, and I parked. I went to a gas station, got some snacks, and I was sitting on a bench there. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, I wasn't on the bench where I was in this other place. But the people couldn't see me, but I was aware of them all. Standing maybe 20, 30 feet apart, it was like I couldn't believe it. It was, and one thing I can remember about it, it was kind of a pale. It wasn't as vivid colors as we have here, but it was more of a pastel blue or gray kind of an experience.
And you're very much aware that they could not see you.
Absolutely not. That's what I was afraid of. But then I just observed for a while, and then all of a sudden it was gone. But it just blew me away.
When you say it was gone, you mean everything suddenly returned to the normal setting?
Where I was, right. But for, I'd say several minutes, I was just in awe. And,
okay, and again, you said that everything was kind of in pastels. In other words, everything was a little softer than reality.
Kind of gray blues, something like that.
Yeah.
But there were couples. It could be a man and a woman, but they were female and men. It could be two men. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I said, what?
All right, so you went from an area. Describe the area that you had been in. You were on a bench, you say. And what was it? The gas station must have been there close by,
yeah,
or what?
That sort of thing. Just stopped to get some water or whatever it was at that time and sat down, and boom, I was just, I you know, like I was saying, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And, you know, that's why I was interested in when you said slipped into another dimension, because I think this qualifies for that. Because I was in the same space, but I was in their dimension. And I, at the time, I was more nervous about it, like I was intruding and, you know, I was going to be found out. But
No, this absolutely qualifies. It's exactly what I was talking about. Do you recall the kind of dress people were in? Was it normal contemporary dress or what?
More of, it seemed like longer coats. The men had long, longer coats, and it was, but it was an American type of a situation. These were, these people weren't aliens.
Right.
They were like us, but I'm just saying again, I couldn't believe it. You know, I've relayed the story to just a few people. A friend of mine that I was going to visit in Myrtle Creek, Faye, I told her about it, and she said, well, you know, they couldn't see you. You know, you could just see them, and that's exactly what was going on.
All right, Steve, what about sense of time? Do you have any idea how long this little slip lasted?
Maybe several minutes. I was kind of anxious about what I was seeing because I was conscious that I was still myself. But, you know, and like I said, I was more nervous that I was intruding and I was going to be found out. But I just kind of, I turned and looked in every direction, and it was for about as far as you could see. It just didn't end. And it kind of made me interested in the fact that maybe, you know, we'll get a chance to, you know, just to stand around and talk, you know, kind of indefinitely. But it was casual, very casual. The people were very calm looking, and it was just amazing. And I can describe the color as kind of a bluish, grayish white. There's no vivid colors. It was, it was just fantastic.
No, I think pastels would do the trick. It sort of describes it to me. All right, thank you very much. That's exactly what I was talking about. I wonder how many of you have had experiences like that in some way or another, like that, or even very different than that. I really am convinced that the scientists who believe there are all of these dimensions are absolutely correct. They are there. I have no idea what the makeup of them is. For that matter, what the physics of these different dimensions might be like. But I think you really just did hear a legitimate description of something like that that's occurred. And what I want to know, I've had a lot of emails like this, so what I want to know is how many of you out there have had an experience like that gentleman just described? I think that he may have, in fact, for a moment, for some reason, and it would be interesting to discern what brings something like this on. It may be way outside our knowledge base, but it sure would be interesting to know. Let's try again. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. This is Rod calling from Austin, Texas. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
And to you. Welcome.
Listen, I have a request. Your earlier guest was talking about certain issues that I really like listening to, drug use and these drugs that he was talking about, DMT and ayahuasca. I was wondering if you could maybe have a call in and have people calling in that have experienced these drugs and would like to talk about their experiences.
Well, let's begin with you. You obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but apparently you've tried one of these or several?
No, I've never tried either of those, but I'd be very curious to know what it does to you. You know,
have you ever done any psychedelic?
I've done my fair share of some.
Uh-huh.
I would say, yeah, I have, and it's
they're mind-blowing,
and I think they're really introspective, and there's a lot of things that your guest was talking about that just, you know, it opens something, and that's all you can say is that your mind.
Okay, well, try and describe to me what it opened.
It opened your mind. It's a mind, your perception, it's like the guy was saying, doors of perception, just like the book, you know, that, you know, you do these drugs, and that's the best way of describing it to me, is like your mind opens.
All right, done deal, like your mind opens. All right, well, we're talking about that and anything else you would like, including travel to other dimensions. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.